5 seconds to the open. You ready?
Who wants to get this thing started right about now?
Welcome to Follow the Money Weekly with your host, Jerry Robinson.
Welcome.
Not just some guru.
Oh, really?
Your host is an economist and a best-selling author.
What an interesting news item. I'd better write that down.
And just someone who likes to make money and help you to make money.
Welcome to Follow the Money Weekly.
And here he is, Jerry Robinson.
Friends, welcome to the only radio broadcast dedicated to bringing you more truth packed into 1 hour than the mainstream media gives you all week long. You have found it. You're listening to Follow the Money Weekly Radio on the web at www.ftmdaily.com. On this week's program, the new, updated, and totally revised edition of Bankruptcy of Our Nation is en route to stores all over America this week. The petrodollar system exposed the 5 levels of financial freedom and the 21 income streams that you can create both now and in retirement in print for the very first time. Jennifer and I will discuss the new book on today's program. And we're also joined by Tom Cloud on gold and silver, Jay Peroni on stocks, and John Burrs with a tip on retirement planning. All of that and more lies straight ahead. Friends, you have found the only radio broadcast dedicated to helping you become a better investor and create multiple streams of income. This is Follow the Money Weekly. The best hour in radio begins right now.
Book is finally coming to a store near you, and we are so excited here at Follow the Money. We're on the web at ftmdaily.com, and check us out on the web. Perhaps you're listening to us on the web today, perhaps you're listening through your radio speakers, but regardless, we're so glad that you tuned in this week, and I want to talk about, by the way, my name is Jennifer Robinson. I'm Jerry Robinson's wife, business partner, and co-host here on Follow the Money Weekly. And I am so excited about Jerry's brand new book. It's out on Amazon Kindle. Right now, you can go pick it up for your Kindle. You can go pick it up for your Google Books. Everywhere on the web, it's in ebook format right now, and it's headed to a store near you. Now, Jerry, I'm really excited. We have 15 chapters in this book. Much of the material is brand new from the previous book. And by the way, the name of the book is Bankruptcy of Our Nation. The original version came out back in 2009. This is the revised and expanded edition. And the biggie, the big thing that it includes that the original one didn't. It includes many new things, but the biggie is the 21 streams of income that you can create now and in retirement. And we'll touch on that here on the show. We definitely want you to pick up a copy of the book and you can dive into all of those. But let's start with just kind of an outline of the book. I'm really excited. I want to share with our listeners what all they can find in the book. Mm-hmm. And there are so many provocative chapter titles, beginning with chapter 1, What is Money Really? And Jerry, I want you to just give us a little outline here. I know that one of my favorite parts in the book, or in chapter 1, is where you talk about a lady in your church named Margaret. That's kind of a neat story, and it really kind of sums up this whole chapter.
Yeah, the chapter, What is Money Really? I mean, it really is an important question because many people think that they know what the U.S. dollar is, and we'll talk about that in a minute, what it really, really is. But this chapter gets into the idea of money itself. How has money been used throughout time? You know, we've used things like shells and feathers and salt and silver and paper, obviously, for currency throughout the history of the world. Now, the interesting thing in this chapter, and those of you who picked up the very first edition, you may remember the story about Margaret. Margaret had said to me at one point, she had made the comment, it was a lady that I knew, she said, Jerry, why do you spend so much time talking about money? Don't you know that money is the root of all evil? Now, those of you who are well-versed in your Bible, you know that 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10 says that the love of money is the root of all evil. And I spent some time trying to find out exactly what she meant, and come to find out, she literally thought the Bible had said that the money was the root of all evil, that money itself was the root of all evil. And what we do is we get into the idea of financial philosophies, family financial philosophies, how you view money. Do you think money is dirty? Do you think it's evil? Do you think it's wrong? Do you think it's immoral? And so we get into all these different ideas, and of course we explain that money is amoral. It doesn't have morality. It's not even capable of having any kind of morality. You can use money to build a nuclear bomb, or you can use money to build an orphanage. Money is amoral in and of itself. So we get into the idea of what money really is because we're laying the foundation for helping you break free financially. Jennifer?
All right. Well, chapter two is called A Short History of Fiat Currencies. Now, maybe you're listening, a newer listener, you've never heard the word fiat before. Well, this will be an interesting chapter for you, A Short History of Fiat Currencies.
Yeah, and I want to throw in that the publisher actually did a mini Kindle book on this chapter. It's only 99 cents. If you go on to Amazon Kindle and you search for this phrase, your money is worthless, you'll find chapter two available as an instant download for 99 cents. And you can download that to your Kindle. But it goes into the idea of fiat currencies, what they're all about, the history of them. We go back to the Weimar Republic. We talk about, you know, Yugoslavia and many of the worst cases of hyperinflation throughout history. And we draw a parallel between those and the coming hyperinflation that we see here in America.
Yeah, I'm telling you, for those who don't get the link yet between history and economics, or our finances, our dollar, this is the chapter for you to read. This is really going to open your eyes. Now, chapter three is, it has an interesting title, The Rise and Fall of the Golden Permission Slip. What is this one all about?
This is really the rise and fall of the gold standard, because the United States was rooted in some sort of gold standard for some time. In 1913, the Federal Reserve came around, but we still had the gold standard. The gold standard didn't end until after the Depression, 1933, when the dollar came off of the gold standard. Nevertheless, we maintained an international gold standard all the way up to 1971, whenever President Nixon got onto TV and interrupted the Bonanza show. And that evening, I think it was a Sunday evening or whatever evening it was, August 15th, 1971, he came on the television and said, we are basically going to rid the dollar of a gold standard. And at that point, you know, we really moved into this area where we had the very first in all of history, a paper fiat currency all around the world.
You know, many people, I would dare to say, I've even spoken to many people who still believe that the dollar is backed up by some sort of gold or silver.
Yeah, including the Congress. There was a poll done not too long ago that showed that the, you know, senators and congressmen, they actually believe this. It's because we have such terrible teaching at the economic level for most people. Most people don't really understand economics. They understand, if they do understand a version of it, they understand Keynesian economics, which is the idea that the government is the savior and the government can fix everything. And it's very, very different from what history tells us. History shows us that governments are in no way, shape, or form the savior. In fact, they're the number one exterminator of mankind. And we know that from history. Just look at the 20th century for that, or look at the 19th century for that. I mean, just go back and look at history and you'll find out that the governments are not the savior, but they sure do like that title. They like people to think that they're the savior. But we talk about the gold standard in this chapter, the rise and the fall.
Yeah, and the next chapter, now this topic, obviously you will hear this almost every week on our show here on FTM Weekly. However, you won't hear this topic too much, if at all, on the mainstream media. And chapter four is called The Petrodollar System, Same Game with a New Name. What do you mean by same? Same as what?
Well, it's the same as the gold standard. There was something backing up the dollar, and it was gold. And they moved in 1973 from a gold standard, which they, you know, they got rid of in 1971, and they moved instead to a petrodollar standard, a petro standard, an oil standard. So they backed up dollars with oil, so to speak. And so all oil became denominated in dollars. And if you wanted to buy a barrel of oil, you had to have a dollar bill to do it. And so this became the petrodollar standard, or the petrodollar system. And so it's really the same game of propping up a currency with something, but it had a new name. This time it was called the petrodollar system. And we get into this concept and explain it. And I tell you what, I actually set my Google alerts to alert me every time something was written about the petrodollar system some time ago. And I consistently see our articles popping up in the Google alerts because people are tossing them around all over the web, all over the world, because this information is not out there. We're doing everything we possibly can to get this information out. People don't understand why the foreign policy is the way that it is or why we continue to meddle in the Middle East. It has everything to do with this petrodollar system. And we expect in the coming, you know, months and probably in the next year or so that we're going to see the ultimate collapse of the petrodollar system. And when that occurs, people are going to all of a sudden realize what it is. You can learn about it in this book, Bankruptcy of Our Nation, Your Financial Survival Guide.
Speaking of foreign policy, Jerry, chapter 5, in fact, is called Petrodollar Wars, Protecting Dollar Demand Through the Barrel of a Gun. That one is probably my favorite chapter, I have to say, just because you don't hear this stuff anywhere. I mean, nowhere. This is not in the history books. This is not on the news. It's so eye-opening.
The petrodollar wars really explain our foreign policy today. There was a bumper sticker that I saw. It's been a few years ago, and it was a cute one. It said, "What is our oil doing underneath their sand?" You know, what's our oil doing underneath their sand? And you see the United States is meddling in the Middle East. They don't want the oil, right? I mean, we literally print the dollars. We create paper that buys the oil. So we don't need to have tons and tons of oil because we have the paper that can actually get the oil. We can print it out of thin air. So we really don't need the oil. We just need to have the means to control the oil. And we don't just want to control the oil. We want to control those who control the oil. So the United States has to control those who control the world's oil supplies. And the majority of those countries are in the Middle East. So the Middle East invasions, the Middle East wars, the fact that we have a footprint in many of these areas is simply the fact that, oh, you think about it, we have 130 military bases around the world. I mean, military bases in over 130 countries. That is a lot of military bases. But you have to remember, when you're running an empire and you have something like the petrodollar system to protect, then you must have a barrel of a gun pointing at all of your subjects. And that's exactly where we are. The name of the game is empire. Nothing has changed. People often say, you know, Jerry, well, why do you call America an empire? Well, what was Britain? It was an empire. What was Rome? It was an empire. What is America? Well, it's not an empire. Of course it's an empire. It has a tremendous amount of power. In fact, if any nation in the whole history of the entire world could be termed an empire, it's us. And then people will often say, well, you know, we don't have any subjects or we don't have any colonies. Colonization has nothing to do with empire. Empire is a state of mind. And we actually, while we don't have colonies per se, we have subjects and they price their oil in dollars. And if they don't, they're hanging from a noose. Just ask Saddam Hussein, and he'll tell you exactly, well, he can't tell you anymore. But, you know, many others are very familiar with this. Jennifer.
Well, chapter 6, we'll move on from that subject. Read the chapter. It's going to be enlightening. Chapter 6 is called The History of the Federal Reserve, or How America Lost the Revolutionary War. Now, of course, I've read the chapter. This topic was in chapter 11, I believe, in the original book, and it was my favorite chapter in the original. So I know the answer to this question, but I thought that we won that war. Why is this chapter How America Lost the Revolutionary War?
We lost the Revolutionary War, very put simply, because when we left, you know, I don't know if anybody's ever read the book, The Economic Interpretation of the U.S. Constitution by Charles A. Beard. Or if you've read some of the different ideas about what was at stake for the founders financially. But they had a lot at stake. And one of the things that we notice in the founding of the nation is that there was a tremendous entanglement of the Bank of England in the United States. Now, we always hear about the Church of England. The Church of England wanted to persecute, you know, Americans, so they came over here and they got away from persecution. Well, you couldn't go to America and get away from persecution unless you lived in Pennsylvania or maybe Rhode Island. I mean, in many of these areas here in the early colonies, I mean, if you looked at somebody wrong, you could end up, you know, hanging from the gallows. So, you know, it was a pretty tough environment. There was a lot of persecution going on. But the Church of England could not reach us across the sea, right? But the Bank of England could. And the Bank of England wanted in. And they finally got in with the First Bank of the United States. Hamilton lobbied for it over and over and over. And it was finally passed and signed into law. And then eventually the charter ended. The Second Bank of the United States came into play. And of course, it was run by the same European central bankers that ran the Bank of England, the same families. And then it eventually collapsed at the hand of Andrew Jackson, who was a tremendous foe of the Second Bank of the United States and central bankers in general, although he also committed one of the biggest acts of, you know, genocide with the Indian Removal Act of 1830, whenever he sent, you know, thousands of Indians to their death in death marches, you know, across to the West. Actually sent them to the state of Oklahoma, where he said no white man would want to live. And so they sent the Indians to live there. But, you know, as we go through time, what we find out is that the Federal Reserve is born in 1913, and it gets passed December 23rd, 1913, as all of Congress and everybody is at home, you know, for Christmas time. And here we have, again, the European infiltration, the European bankers infiltrating the United States. So the United States wanted to break free from the Church of England and the Bank of England. Well, the Church of England was easy to break free from. But the Bank of England, we never could. And it kept its tentacles around us. And in essence, that is why I say we did lose the Revolutionary War, because although we won with the guns, we were able to, you know, fight them off. They still entangled. They got entangled into our banking system, and they've been controlling us ever since.
Okay, well, we're talking with Jerry Robinson, author of the just-released book, Bankruptcy of Our Nation, Revised and Expanded Edition. You're going to want to get this book, and you can get it right now on Amazon Kindle for a special price of $4.99.
Yeah, it's $4.99, and it's only going to be that way, I think, for the first week or so. The publisher is just doing a special. I think they do that. It's on iTunes. It's also available in stores. They can pick it up at Barnes & Noble, any of the major outlets. Lifeway Christian Stores is going to be carrying it. Many of the stores may be still getting their copies in, because I know that the distribution is, you know, still going. But if you want to get a copy right this second and you have a Kindle, pick it up on Amazon.com. Get the Kindle version, download it to your Kindle or to your Nook on Barnes & Noble. Or you can also download it, you know, through iTunes. But you can also go on Amazon and pre-order the book there, and they'll send it out to you in just a few days. So, Jennifer.
Okay, so I want to ask you a few more questions about the book. And these are really, really intriguing chapter titles. Chapter 7 is called Modern Money Mechanics, What the Banksters Do Not Want You to Know. Now, there's a question in the chapter, and it says, find a dollar bill and take a look at it. And you ask the question, who owns this dollar bill? Who owns that dollar bill that's in your wallet?
And if you look at the top, it says Federal Reserve Note. Mm-hmm. And so it implies that there is some sort of note that is attached to that dollar. If you look back in 19, you know, back before 1933, back to maybe say 1923, for example, you look at a silver dollar. It says silver certificate at the top, because it was actually backed by silver. You could take it into the bank, you could change it in for silver, and that would be great. But today, with the Federal Reserve and the way they've hijacked the monetary system, it actually says at the top of your dollar bill, Federal Reserve Note. Now, if you have a car note, or if you have a you know, some sort of outstanding note, then you know what that means, right? It doesn't mean a piece of paper that you write on. It means a piece of debt. It's a debt instrument. Therefore, what that is telling you is that the dollar is a piece of debt that is owned by the Federal Reserve, and you owe it. Now, wait, do you owe it? Well, the Treasury technically owes it, but you are obviously in debt as an American citizen if the Treasury is in debt. So this is exactly what it means. The United States dollar is debt. All right, let me just say that again. The United States dollar is a piece of debt. It is not used to pay debt. It is not used for any other purpose. it is in itself debt. Okay, and once you grasp that concept and you realize when it says Federal Reserve note, it literally means Federal Reserve debt, then you fully understand that you're transacting in a totally debt-based monetary system. And that obviously should mess with your head a little bit, especially if you're one of those who say, well, the borrower is a slave to the lender. Well, wake up, because now you are a slave. If you transact in the dollar, you're transacting in a debt-based monetary system, and therefore you're living in a slave type of monetary system. It's basically bondage is where we are.
And that brings us to chapter 8, which is called America, the Greatest Debtor Nation in the World. And you do talk about where in the scriptures, in the Bible, it talks about the borrower is a slave to the lender. You know, this debt-based economy that we find ourselves in. But, you know, as just regular citizens, not really part of the government, who is our slave owner, so to speak? You know, who are we slaves to?
We're enslaved to the bankers. We're enslaved to the corporations that have basically risen up around us and have dominated. And in essence, the bankers for a long time have been running things because they're able to charge interest. We get into this topic also in that last chapter about how interest doesn't even exist. I mean, these are very bizarre topics. You have to really just sit down as you're reading this and not be operating any heavy machinery as you're doing it, because it
that's the truth.
It's bizarre stuff. But that's the truth about economics, is that it is very bizarre where we are today. And that explains why we have the numbers that we see, $16 trillion in national debt. How does that occur? And who is that owed to? And who owns it? Well, you start looking at some of those answers, and it's not very pretty. So America is the greatest debtor nation in world history. There's no doubt about it. We've been saying it for years. There's never been a nation in more monetary debt than the United States of America. And if you define debt as slavery, the borrower is a slave to the lender, then you must admit that the land of the free and the home of the brave is the greatest slave nation that has ever existed in the world. Jennifer.
And that's a tough pill to swallow for people who have never heard this information before.
Some people don't take the Bible literally. They don't think that, you know, that means anything. The borrower is a slave to the lender. Well, that doesn't, you know, necessarily apply. But if you actually believe the Bible to be literal, then that means that America, if it's the greatest debtor nation in world history, it has to be by definition the greatest slave nation in world history.
Mm-hmm. Now, chapter 9 is called The Retirement Crisis. This one is really eye-opening. There's something called the 2036 crisis that we talk about in this chapter. Chapter 10 is called, now this is one that we get question after question every single week. When is the dollar going to collapse, Jerry? When is it all going to come tumbling down? Well, chapter 10 is called The Coming American Hyperinflation and Dollar Collapse. Mm-hmm. And we talk about how some things will unfold. We don't believe that the dollar will collapse tomorrow or overnight, but we do point out some signs and signals that you can be watching for.
Yeah, if you go back to 1900, you'll find that a dollar, what was worth a dollar then, is now only worth about 3 cents today. So we've lost, you know, we've already experienced a terrible inflation over time. But inflation itself is not a natural phenomenon. It only exists in debt-based monetary systems. Inflation doesn't operate in a true gold standard because you're able to keep things stabilized. Inflation occurs when money is printed, and money is printed at the behest of our U.S. Treasury and our Federal Reserve system. So as we see the United States trying to deal with all of its financial problems, it's trying to deal with the fact that it has military bases spread out all over the world to enforce its petrodollar system and maintain its economy. As we see the United States entangled in all of these wars, and we see the United States attempting to hand out all kinds of freebies to the people, and as we see the United States continuing to just overreach in every single area, where you go into the airport and there is the government, you go onto the streets and there's the government, and they're everywhere. They have had a tremendous increase in employment while the private industries and the private sector has suffered losing jobs. but the government has been gaining jobs. So we're certainly seeing a huge increase in the size of government, and that costs money. And in order to maintain that, they're going to have to print more money. And when they print more money, we're going to see continued problems. And if the demand for all of that money slows down, which we know that it will eventually, because anything that is unsustainable cannot last, and we have a very unsustainable system, then we're going to see hyperinflation. And hyperinflation is dead ahead. We are going to see it. And in this chapter, we get into what will precede it. We believe that there is going to be an outbreak of war in the Middle East, around Syria and Iran, in those regions. There is a lot at stake there. Those of you who are part of our FTM Insider area, you've been hearing me talk about that in our conference calls, kind of giving you the lowdown on what we're seeing. But we do expect hyperinflation. We expect that to be preceded by a war, and all of it's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. And chapter 11 is called Maxed Out, The New American Slavery. That's a good chapter as well. Now, we are talking with Jerry Robinson today, the author of the brand new, just released book entitled Bankruptcy of Our Nation, Revised and Expanded Edition.
You know, Jennifer, I want to throw this in real quickly, because when we say the word, you know, maxed out, we say this phrase, this name of this chapter, The New American Slavery. When we say slavery, I think it conjures up really negative connotations. We think of early America. We think of the slave trade, the transatlantic, you know, slave trade. We think about the fact that the United States was founded on rum and on tobacco, and on the fact all those exports and using African slaves in order to grow tobacco and export it. And so we think of those terms. We think of an actual auction block with a slave. But you know, you can be a slave to your culture when you go against your better judgment and you refuse to question the status quo. You know, that you can actually be a slave to your culture when you won't ask any questions. You can be a slave to your religion when you're too fearful to question the validity of your own beliefs, to even question why you believe what you believe. You know, so you can be a slave to your religion. You can be a slave to politics. I mean, I'm confronted by slaves to politics every single day in my inbox, where we have people with political persuasions that are based upon the media, based upon the culture, based upon some guy's opinion, and they're not based upon their own thinking. They just are hearing what they are supposed to be told. I can always tell when I'm talking to somebody who's been listening to Rush Limbaugh, you know, or talking to somebody who's been listening to Glenn Beck. I can always tell, because you can tell that they have a lot of straw man arguments. You get past them really quickly as you're talking to them. You quickly realize, oh, I'm not talking to Joe Blow, I'm talking to Glenn Beck. Oh, I'm not talking to Joe, I'm talking to Rush Limbaugh. Because they listen to this stuff and they become enslaved to it because it's all they know. And they think it's right. And they think it's real. This guy, what was the guy's name? Well, David Barton. You know, David Barton, who the right, for whatever reason, just loves this guy. You know, and he's always talking about, you know, how Thomas Jefferson was a strong Christian and about how the founding fathers were wonderful people. Give me a break. I mean, I don't know what this guy has been smoking, but, you know, I'll tell you the truth. His publisher, Thomas Nelson, the largest Christian publisher in the nation, pulled his book. I mean, you know how little that happens? It didn't happen because they were fearful of any kind of boycott, which you know, some of his promoters are saying. Instead, it's because there was no historical fact in what he was writing. So you can be a slave to your politics. You can be a slave to your religion. You can be a slave to a paycheck when you feel trapped in a job that pays you just enough to survive, but not enough to break free financially. How many people we know who are slaves to paychecks? We can be slaves to money whenever it becomes our primary obsession. It's what we are chasing after. We can become a slave to consumerism when we are enslaved by the clever marketing messages that are concocted by corporations and the media that are trying to take advantage of our appetites and our spending patterns. They trap us in a vain search for an increased amount of self-worth through our consumption. And of course, we can become slaves to debt whenever we try to live well beyond our means. And that's what America has become. They've become a slave to debt.
Yeah, you mentioned we can become slaves to consumerism. And chapter 12 actually is called Breaking Free from the Consumption Trap. Now, this is huge because I don't think, you know, you and I even, we didn't realize until just a few years back about this consumption trap. We knew that, of course, corporations are out to make money and they make money off of consumers. But we came up with this concept of the consumption trap, and it was kind of an eye-opening experience for us. And we talk in chapter 12 about how you can break free from this trap, even though it's literally all around us.
Yeah, this chapter 12 is a really interesting chapter, the breaking free from the consumption trap. And we talk about ways that you can break free. We explain what it is and we get into it. And I think that that in particular, that chapter is going to be very liberating to many people.
Absolutely. Chapter 13. Now, this is where we start getting into strategies in the book, things that you practical steps you can start taking. Chapter 13 is an introduction to our PACE investing philosophy: precious metals, agriculture, commodities, and energy. This is definitely a chapter worth reading. If you haven't heard of our PACE philosophy before, even if you have heard of our PACE philosophy, you can read the chapter and just get a ton of information about our philosophy behind this and even practical steps, actual ideas on investing in this way. Okay, now, drum roll, please. This is the chapter that everyone has probably been waiting for.
Yeah, we get a lot of emails about this.
At least those who have been listening to our show for some time, is 21 income streams you can create now and in retirement. Now, I'm sure you know everybody's going to be flocking to this chapter to write down these 21 income streams, but how easy, how practical, how realistic are these 21 income streams?
You know, I think they're pretty darn realistic. I mean, we put together several. Whenever I was a financial advisor, we realized that most financial advisors said that there was about 11 streams of income that people could create in retirement. And that's just a pretty well-known fact. Most people end up in retirement with two. I mean, Social Security, and even their Social Security now, if you have student loans, they're going to start taking your Social Security, reducing your payments like they have been across the country now. So Social Security is one. And then the other is sometimes a pension if you're lucky, sometimes a 401k, some other type of income stream, maybe an annuity. But for the most part, the average person in America is going to retire with two income streams. But you can have up to 11, according to financial advisors. Well, I always saw more. I always saw more that you could build. And in this book, we highlight 21 of them. And so we talk about things like reverse mortgages. We talk about things like charitable remainder trusts. We talk about things like annuities and life insurance income. That's right. I said life insurance income. We also talk about things like real estate and wholesaling real estate and real estate rentals. And we talk about things like affiliate marketing, which Jennifer and I, you know, we both have, you know, excelled at that. We talk about consumer direct marketing. We talk about what are some of the other, I mean, there's so many of these income streams that I could just sit here and rattle off, but they're all covered in the book. And what we do is we talk about them, we give you a brief explanation of what they are, and then we also provide more resources on our website. So you may not be able to see them directly on our website, but through the book, we have special links that you can go to. So I encourage you to get a book if you have any interest in the income streams that we've been talking about here, the multiple streams of income. You need a copy of this book, Bankruptcy of Our Nation.
Yeah, and by the way, you can pick up a copy on Amazon for your Kindle, or maybe you have a Kindle app on your iPad or iPhone.
$5.
$4.99.
$5, yeah.
It's a publisher's special price, limited time. We don't even know how long they're going to keep this price intact. We know it's going to be probably at least a week, so you have a good chance to go out and get the book for $4.99.
And the way to do that is just to go to Amazon.com, type in Bankruptcy of Our Nation, or type in my name, Jerry Robinson, and you'll see it there. Now, you'll see two versions of Bankruptcy of Our Nation. You'll see a blue one, which is the old one, and you'll see a gold one, which is the new one. Now, you can obviously look at the date, and you'll see that you're looking at the new one. But be sure you select the one that is the new, revised, and updated version. It's a gold cover, not the blue cover.
Good. So chapter 15, which is the last chapter, is called 8 Key Strategies to Protect Your Finances. What are a couple of these strategies, Jerry?
Well,
just to give them a teaser here.
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, the 8 key strategies that we talk about in the book, you know, a couple of them are obviously diversifying your savings. We get really heavy into the DSL topic that we've talked about here in our program, the diversified 6-month liquid savings. What does that look like? How do you do it? We also talk about the importance of understanding the profit principle, understanding that saving is so vital to your financial future. And viewing it in a different way. You know, when a guy has a heart attack, you know, I'm not making light of that at all. I mean, that's a serious thing. When a guy has a heart attack, you know what happens? he realizes that he's got to eat better, right? It causes him to realize, I need to make some changes in my life. Well, unfortunately, with our financial lives, I guess a version of a heart attack would be like a bankruptcy or something. We would actually have some sort of tremendous tragedy in our financial lives, maybe a bankruptcy or maybe a huge medical bill without insurance. And if we don't have adequate savings, we are setting ourselves up. It's like not exercising. It's not like not taking care of ourselves. So we have to have the right motivation. What if you could have the same motivation as someone who had been through bankruptcy and wanted to avoid that again? We teach something called the profit principle that helps motivate you, helps get your mind focused on the right things to help you head toward this financial freedom in the right way. So we talk about that in that chapter. Jennifer.
Yeah. And one last thing I want to mention about the book is we had so many people with the first edition of the book who wanted to bring this book to their book club or to their small group at church.
We did.
Or to small little reading group, whatever the case. And we have put together a study guide. And when you purchase the book, you unlock the study guide. And you can get that and download it for your small group, for your book club. And there are some really, really good provocative questions in there that get us thinking about these topics, get them relating these topics to our everyday lives, and kind of kicks us into action.
I remember whenever the book first came out back in 2009, we had pastors who were telling us they were preaching from this book. I mean, they were literally preaching from the book, and it was amazing to hear that. But of course, we didn't have a study guide for that very first version. So now we have a study guide. And so once you get the book, you'll see in the book that there is a link to the study guide. You can actually download that PDF and use it. I tell you what, this book, I think, should be in every single church across America. We need to have people understanding what's happening. We need to have them understanding hyperinflation. People in churches need to fully comprehend what's happening with the petrodollar system. They need to understand history. They need to know how to create multiple streams of income. They need to understand how to be out of debt. They need to understand how to diversify their savings and diversify their investments. And they need to understand that gold and silver are not bad, like some commentators say that they are, but instead that they are hedges against inflation. They need to understand the PACE philosophy, the precious metals, agriculture, commodities, and energy. All this stuff is contained in this book, $5 on Amazon.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, I wish that I had read this book in high school. I wish it was required reading. For those of you who may homeschool your children, and you have, the high school age, maybe even late junior high age, I'm telling you, this is great information. I think it should be required reading. And now with the study guide, this will help you as the homeschooler to really be able to use this book in that type of setting as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I should also mention all of our new FTM insiders are going to receive a copy of this completely signed whenever they sign up as an FTM insider. Also, we're going to be making those available if you want an autographed copy. Of course, those are a little bit more expensive. I think we just charge you the regular price, which the retail price, I think, is like $13.99. So if you want one of those, just call us, 800-609-5530, and we'd be happy to get one of those out to you as well. But I would tell you, go out to the store and pick up this book and get a copy for your son, get a copy for your daughter, get a copy for your sister, your mother, your daughter, your uncle, your brother. I mean, get this book in their hands. Give this as a gift to people that you know. They will thank you because the information in here does not exist anywhere. I have went out into the marketplace before this book came out and I said, I'm going to find my book out on the shelves. I could not find it. There is no book out there that talks about and tackles the problems and then gives you the solutions. And I'm not talking about solutions like put your money in a bank, invest in stocks, duh. I mean, all that stuff is, we know that. We need real solutions. We need to know, what are we going to do to increase our income? How do we progress? Our five levels of financial freedom, all that is in here. So, and at the very end, by the way, I don't want to leave this out, Jennifer, we have a nice appendix at the back, which really breaks down our DSL savings, our five levels of financial freedom. And then we had a lot of frequently asked questions. So we cover a lot of those. Maybe you have a question that you might have in the back of the book. We cover many, many questions that.
Your question might be in there. We get emails, floods of emails every single week. And we took some of the more common questions that we get. We just throw them in the book, mm-hmm. and we answer them right there. So if you have a question as you're reading, flip back to the appendix. It might be answered.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of this book and listen to me one more time. I need you to hear me on this. If you go out to the store and they don't have a copy of this, would you walk up to them and tell them, why don't you have a copy of Bankruptcy of Our Nation in this bookstore? Would you ask them that? And would you ask them to get a copy in? Because we need your help to get this information out to the public. The public has a right to understand what's happening. They have a right to know what's going on. And they have heard enough of the problem. They need the solution. Would you help us bring the solution to America? Would you help us do that by going out to your bookstore, calling your bookstore, asking if they have Bankruptcy of Our Nation in their store? And if they don't, tell them to get it on their shelves because you want to see it for your community.
And remember, you can always call us to get a copy of the book as well. We'll sign it for you. Jerry will sign it. And you can just give us a call at 800-609-5530. That's 800-609-5530. And remember, the time for debate is over. The time to prepare is now. So pick up your copy of Bankruptcy of Our Nation, Revised and Expanded. It's your financial survival guide, and it will really help you during these times.
Follow the Money Weekly presents your precious metals market update. Here's Tom Cloud.
Well, Jerry, the market definitely this week has shown that it's breaking out. In fact, some of our timing services that we use gave a buy signal in silver on Thursday, the first one that we've had in about 6 months, with the price breaking out above $28. It retreated a little bit on Friday, but I still believe that we can finally say now that we are in the market. We have had a lot of purchasing in the silver market, and I think we're going to see now with the Jackson Hole meeting coming up last year, that was the trigger, and we're only 3 weeks away from that, and the Democratic and Republican convention. So things should start getting a little more lively. I definitely would not wait on silver any longer. I'm not going to tell you it's going to jump like a dollar overnight, but the trend now we think is set. See $32 to $33 silver as a minimum by the end of the year. So we're talking about somewhere between 15 and 25% move just the last 4.5 months of the year. So on the silver, it is officially, I'm saying, to buy it and get in it. We've waited for about 3 months to say this again as we went through the consolidation period, and that's where we are now. We think it has consolidated. We think the next move is right in front of us, starting sometime during this month and carrying on up through the election. Another key event economically has been the movement in the bond market. We've seen the 10-year Treasury yield go from 1.4% to 1.62% in 2 weeks. That's a 15% increase in interest rates on the 10-year government bond. This is not a very good sign for bond investors or people leaving their money in the paper dollars. And we've been predicting this as people have been listening to us for several months, that the dollar would reach a point. And now that we saw the event last Thursday in Europe where they can now monetize their own debt like we do, I think you'll continue to see the euro climb here, the U.S. dollar just start steadily going down. So this is all very favorable for both gold and silver, and gold is now up for the last 5 days, and I definitely have been saying buy gold, buy gold, buy gold, because when it breaks 1640 and we're only 20 bucks away, we're going to see that market go to 1700 very quickly and then on to 1800 after some resistance. So I would be in gold and silver and out of the U.S. dollar. And if you're heavily in the bond market, you need to really evaluate that, because the signal is that the bonds that have been in a bull market during this consolidation period and people moving out of the euro into U.S. treasuries is not ended, but is getting very close. Our palladium and platinum both look very interesting. They're not quite They're still consolidating. They haven't broke above the technical moving average to give them a buy signal, but they're getting much closer, and we're watching. But as I said before, I'm not hesitant to buy palladium at this price range, or platinum for that matter. But if you're looking at it from a technical basis, we're not quite ready yet. And the news on the diamond front, we're having a lot of purchasing going on in China on the yellows. Seen the publicity about the white diamonds with the ETF not getting approved yet. We've seen white diamonds actually dip down the last 2-3 months in anticipation. People were buying the white diamonds they thought with the ETF, but just the opposite has happened with the yellows that we've been promoting and talking about. So I would continue to look at those. We're looking for a double-digit jump in those also by the end of the year. So all in all, it's time to move into the hard assets a lot more heavily. We're moving into the Indian buying season. We're moving into the Chinese New Year. We're moving in to the end of the fiscal year of the U.S. government on September 30th. September has always been a good month for metals as we print money to try to balance off the budget. And all that's very favorable for the metals the last 4.5 months of the year. If anybody needs to talk to me, they can reach me at 800-247-2812. That's 800-247-2812. If you're not on our email blast, that's very confidential. We don't share that with anyone. You can go to FTM Daily and hit the Precious Metals button and sign up for our free email blast that go out 2 to 4 times a week, depending on the information that we think is pertinent. With this week's Precious Metals Market Update, this is Tom Cloud signing out.
Gold, silver, palladium. If you have questions about or are looking to purchase precious metals, there is one name to know and one name to call, Tom Cloud at 1-800-247-2812. You hear Tom every week on Follow the Money Weekly, and gold and silver are an excellent hedge against inflation. Tom Cloud has over 30 years' experience as a precious metals advisor. Don't buy your precious metals through a call center and pay inflated prices. Call Tom Cloud, 1-800-247-2812. And for a limited time, tell Tom you heard it from Jerry Robinson on Follow the Money Weekly and receive free shipping and insurance on your order. That's right. Mention Follow the Money Weekly and your shipping and insurance charges are waived on your precious metals purchase. If you have a question about something you heard on the show, call Tom. And to secure your precious metals investment, call Tom, your gold guy, Tom Cloud, 1-800-247-2812. That's 1-800-247-2812. You heard it on Follow the Money Weekly.
Most successful investors figure out a way to spot opportunities before the masses have time to figure it out. They often get in early and reap large benefits along the way. For the contrarian investor who seeks out investment ideas that others don't know about or are unwilling to take a chance on, a little research can go a long way. Right now, many investors are banking on a slow economic recovery. The message of the day is be defensive, buy dividend-paying stocks in recession-resistant companies. In other words, buy utilities, telecom, healthcare, and consumer staples, the more defensive sectors. Well, yes, I agree, those are some great places to be, but if you're looking to make more money, looking at opportunities, if you do a little bit of research, I've discovered something a little bit different. In fact, it's an idea that the average investor has likely never heard of. This idea could possibly deliver much better returns. In a tough economy, consumers are having a tough time paying their bills. As a result, credit card debt, bankruptcies, defaults, and foreclosures are at or near all-time highs. This can cripple the bottom line for financial service companies in the lending business. Yet there is a hero in these tough times. This company is able to leverage 20 years of servicing and 60 years of debt collection experience to provide services and technologies to help financial companies recover assets and enhance customer relationships. Better yet, this company has limited capital requirements, no debt, and a low-cost operating model. If the economy remains sluggish or gets worse, more companies will need help collecting debts. That's where Altisource comes in, ticker symbol ASPS. They provide services to some of the most respected organizations in their industries, including one of the nation's largest subprime servicers, government agencies, and many lenders, servicers, investors, mortgage bankers, credit unions, financial service companies, and hedge funds across the country. Right now, Altisource is trading at $83 a share. They've got 40 to 50% revenue growth and doubling their earnings. As asset recovery of defaulted mortgages will be a hot area for the next several years, Altisource should be more profitable in this type of environment. So I would consider buying Altisource Portfolio Services, ticker symbol ASPS, up to about $85 a share. As the economy continues to be sluggish, Altisource's profitability should soar. I expect this stock to top $100 by the end of the year, with the economic recovery currently stuck in the mud. That will do it for another weekly wrap-up. This is Jay Peroni, Certified Financial Planner, signing off. We'll see you again next week. God bless.
All right. Well, Jay Peroni is a CFP, Certified Financial Planner, a member of our Christian Financial Advisor Network, and he also manages our very own PACE investment portfolio. If you would like to have a free 30-minute review of your investments with Jay, you can call him at 888-664-6963. That's 888-664-6963. And when you do, be sure to tell him you heard about him on Follow the Money Weekly Radio.
All right, where's my money?
Money. Money, money.
Daily bread.
Follow the Money Weekly presents the Retirement Minute.
If I were to tell you that there are three beneficiaries to your estate, and those beneficiaries could be your family, your favorite charity, or the IRS, which two would you pick? From my experience, most people would prefer their estate to go to their family and to their favorite charity, and none of it to the IRS. If this sounds like you, then let's explore a strategy that could help you further the kingdom of God and still not disinherit your children. Let's take a couple named Bill and Nancy. Bill had a large 401k where he worked as a salesman. Bill and Nancy had enough income to take care of them through the rest of their lives and only needed a portion of the 401k to meet this income need. With the remaining portion of the 401k, they had a strong desire to give to their church. I suggested a strategy that would pass the inheritance to their children and their church while leaving the IRS out. Since we know that the tax time bomb does not go off until both Bill and Nancy passes away, this strategy made a lot of sense to them because while one of them is still living, they are exempt from paying estate taxes because of the marital exclusion allowance. So here's what Bill and Nancy did. First of all, they rolled the remaining portion of the 401k asset to an IRA and named their church as the beneficiary of the IRA. Then we started a guaranteed income stream with this money that was guaranteed to pay an income as long as either Bill or Nancy was still living. With this income, we kept out enough for Bill to pay the taxes each year on the income stream, but with the rest of the income, they bought a second-to-die life insurance policy that insured the lives of both Bill and Nancy to equal the value of the IRA, and we named their children as the beneficiaries. So here is the scenario. Since we named the church as the beneficiary of the IRA, when both Bill and Nancy pass away, the church will receive whatever is left in the IRA, and since the church is a charity, they pay no taxes. Then, since the children were named as the beneficiary of the second-to-die life insurance policy, when both Bill and Nancy pass away, the children will receive an income tax-free death benefit. And again, no income taxes are paid on a death benefit of a life insurance policy. Since Bill and Nancy's estate exceeded $1 million because of the second-to-die life insurance policy death benefit, we incorporated the use of an irrevocable life insurance trust to keep the death benefit of the life insurance policy out of their estate, which brought their total estate to under $1 million, and there will be no federal estate taxes to be paid. So by using the combination of a guaranteed income investment, life insurance, and into trust, we were able to give all of the inheritance to the family and the charity, but none to Uncle Sam. So make sure you have your financial affairs in order. And a good way to start this process would be to contact me through the Christian Financial Advisors Network by email at John, that's J-O-H-N, at CFANetwork.org, or you can call me toll-free at 888-914-9909. I would be more than happy to review your financial situation with you to make sure your financial house is in order. And thank you for joining me this week for your Retirement Minute.
All right, friends. Well, that brings us to the end of our program. Thank you so much for choosing to allow me into your life each and every week. It is an honor and a privilege to be a part of yours as well. And as always, I leave you with this final word, this time spoken by the former president, Herbert Hoover, when he said, "Blessed are the young, for they shall inherit the national debt." Just something to think about. Remember, friends, when you want the truth about the global economy, just follow the money. Have a safe and prosperous week, and I'll see you right back here next weekend. God bless.
The views and opinions expressed by the guests on Follow the Money Weekly do not necessarily represent the views of FTMDaily.com or Makers Group Financial, LLC. Even though these are proven strategies, Jerry Robinson is not a financial advisor, and his guests are not legal or tax advisors. You should always consult a trained financial advisor and or tax advisor before making any financial decisions. John Burrs is a registered representative of and does offer securities through Sycor Securities Incorporated. Lifetime Decisions Management Incorporated is not a subsidiary of nor controlled by Sycor Securities Incorporated.